But the week of the second session, for the next session.
It's 16 October. Time is 10:50 a.m. local. Continuing session, RRSG, non-comp discussion.
Please come to the table, everyone. We are ready to resume.
Okay, folks, we're going to get started back here in the room. Wow, Adam's got his own boom mic sitting in front of him.
That's right. I'm like a boss now. This is don't mess with me.
It's going to be music night. Come a little early. Is that what you're gearing up for? Just because we're in Toronto, moon. You figure, you know.
Well, this is my city, right? I mean, yeah. You get, if you have an RSG meeting in your hometown, this should be a rule. You get the special microphone.
You get the special microphone if we host an ICANN meeting in your hometown. I like it. Okay, so we're going to get back started here. I don't know if we need to pause to start the recording, Tim. We're good? Great. We're good to go. So we've got the NomCom folks here in the room for a discussion. We've got, I think their slides are all ready. Yep, they are. Wow. Okay, blinded now. Thanks, Volker. It's cool. Hello, Vanda. I will turn things over to you. And we do have a slide presentation, but I think the... just going to use a couple and have
Thank
a conversation.
Thank you. We are here with also our colleagues from 2013, and I'll give them the opportunity to talk also. My intention here is like 80 the demands each year, just to show up what was the recommendations we got from registry, registrars, business constituents, and ICOC last year. And, of course, ask you if there is any other change or you need to add some issues on that or change any of those recommendations. And if you do that, please send to the next share that is euros behind. And what I would like to just show you is that the way we make the matching metrics based on the requirements and that we receive from you and from the others, and based in our internal analysis for each candidate, and the external analysis for a company that we hired to analyze profiles more detailed. So those are the matchings for this slate of these three candidates for the board together. And when they match all the requirements, fulfill, it's excellent. When the one of them are not in the top of this list for that specific requirement, is well qualified. And if we have some, for instance, in the time availability and these kind of things, maybe not retired people, so have all the time available for the position, so we can consider them qualified. So multilingual is also one thing that one candidate just speaks English. So those are the requirements that in this red ones are the GNSO requirements for their board. So those are one person that was selected for non-vote position just match in that way these all requirements that we receive from all of you. So that's it. And we also made a lot of recommendations for ethical issues, logistic issues, and new process and so on, and it's all published in attending ATRT. This year we have published everything from the first moment and updates every timeline and till today. So we have all published in our web page. So I'd like to give some few minutes to Euro, that's the new chair, to talk with you. Euro, please. Take my position here.
Thank you.
Changing of the guard.
Yeah.
Okay, musical chairs. Good morning. Yrjö Länsipuro is my name. I come from ISOC, Finland, and I'm the chair for the new NOMCOM 2013. I don't have very much to say at this stage because we're just starting our work on Friday. We're working Friday and Saturday here, and but I have something to ask you for. That is to say, we are really dependent on the candidate pool, and we would like to have many candidates to choose from, obviously. And I'd like to ask your help in getting good candidates. You, all of you certainly know people of whom you think that they could make good board directors or good people in the various councils or on the ALEC. So please tell them to apply. The website of the 2013 NOMCOM will be up pretty soon with all the instructions and advice on how to apply. When we start our work here, we'll take a look at the recommendations that were handed to us or will be handed to us from the 2012 nominating committee. Of course, there is a great overlap actually between these two committees. We have like 11 people. So we take a look at the recommendations and see how, whether and what and how they will be incorporated in the rules of procedure of our committee. The other thing is that we also have to look at the timeline, because this coming year, meetings, the ICANN meetings, are historically late. That is to say, both the April meeting and then the summer meeting, and probably also the AGM. So we'll start, and thank you for your attention. Thank you.
Great, thank you. So I think with that, we've got about 15 minutes. We'll take some Q&A, if you're okay with that. I'll start a queue. So I've got Stefan, James, and we'll go from there. Stefan.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Thanks, Euro and Vanda. Obviously, look forward to working with you both and the other members of the committee in the coming year as the registrar representative for this group. I just wanted to briefly say that we've heard some criticism of the NOMCOM over the recent days and weeks, and it's been a topic of conversation, obviously, for us in this group. I don't want to delve into that specifically. I don't think this is necessarily the right time, but just to say that I look forward to, within the committee, having a look at those criticism and hopefully trying to I don't want to say address them, but just having a look at whether they are worthwhile and whether there should be changes. So I hope the committee as a whole is in that frame of mind so that we can move this process forward and improve it. Thanks.
Well, first of all, everybody read these criticisms, but there is a lot of issues there that sort of course there is no truth, but the main issue is we understand that when the non-con as itself is attacked in some way, it contaminates the organization, not only non-com. So we address all the issues to the board, to the BGC, and we are with working with them, and even I talk with Fadi too. And so we're going to have a meeting this week with them, just to say what they want to do that, because it's not, NONCON is an independent group, and there is no for the NONCON to go out and just, you know, feed this kind of bad information around. And of course, there is damage to ICANN. And certainly is. I received a Twitter from the communication head from ITU. So there is a lot of, and many others asking, but the reality is this is for the organization to take a move, not for a group itself to react as it was something that is personal issue. So, but we did those recommendations that I mentioned here. It's a long list of recommendations, and it starts with ethical issues from board members and inside the NONCON, the members of the committee of NONCON, the relationship with the others in outside. It's mostly, in the ethical point of view, is mostly about the way to proceed when you talk with the people, and mostly about the process and logistics, because also impacts all this, the work of NONCON. But we do not recognize ourselves neither as a junior, neither as a corrupt, or any other word that was used there. It's, but we do believe that the organization itself needs to make a move and protect themselves about this kind of attack. Certainly, nothing is free, and I don't know why, but it's not acceptable that an internal member just go out and, you know, and start to criticize himself and all the other colleagues and the whole organization without really a point. A lot of main points that is in some way circulate around, it's very important to get feedback, because but it's not going to the press and use bad words that will do that. Okay, next one.
Great, James. So kind of similar question. You know, I didn't even know about this article or even really care until I think that the response to the GNSO Council question, which I thought was a legitimate question, and yeah. I felt that the NOMCOM response was to close down Now, registrars are not strangers to being attacked in the media, in ICANN, in public forums, by, you know, everywhere. And I think our response, and also individual as individual businesses, our response is there any truth to it? Do I need to prove this person wrong? Do I need to do some self-examination and make some corrections? But I think the only wrong answer in that situation is to say nothing. And I think that's kind of was my perception of the weekend sessions. The good news is I know that Stefan is coming on board, and I know that he's a very energetic and capable person. And I also see that the chair-elect is a former colleague from the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, Cheryl Langenor. So my question is to everyone here, what is the accountability mechanism for the NomCom? Is there one? Does it undergo periodic reviews? Does it have to? Okay, so help me because I don't know what how that all works.
Well, what is NomCom is for that? It's NomCom is there to select people from many positions. ATRT just suggested that, recommended that we put this more transparent and account to the community what we are doing there and who we are selecting there. And this also depends on the people sitting there. So everybody is involved in sending best people to sit there also. And so it's all about to have best people sitting there and to be able to select the best people and publish that and publish why we are selecting this and not that. Why? That is the idea of matching metrics, just to show that each person should match the requirements that we heard from the community, and communities, SOs, and IACs.
Cheryl Langdon-Orfill, I've got to say, at the transcript record, I'm very aware of the time, and I've just been asked by Stefan if you wouldn't mind. No, I don't need to sit. To specifically answer your question, yes, there is bylaw mandated periodic review of the nominating committee. That was done in the year before and the year of Adam's chairmanship, so that was Adam Peake, and that was done, if memory serves, would be running around the 2009 period. That was the opportunity for the ICANN community to make suggestions for the very first time about NomCom. NomCom has very, very particular rarities in our community because of its, by necessary, isolation and confidentiality. But it has been reviewed once. It will be reviewed again. And as you know, we heard more about the NomCom in the ATRT than almost any other part of the organisation. So what strikes me, and this is just off the top of my head, is has been reviewed, needs to be reviewed again. ATRT made recommendations that Adam certainly started to implement. That's continued on. But this is an opportunity. And I'm sure with the right planning and the right team, we'll be doing that.
Yeah, and all the recommendations are there to be implemented after this year. We selected many points to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vanda. Thank you, Cheryl. Any other questions, or Volker, are there any other questions online? Okay, if not, thank you all for coming in and spending the time. Clearly, you know, there is a lot of focus and attention being paid to the NomCom, so we're looking forward to moving forward. And again, happy to have Stefan on the team. Apologies to those of you that will now have to work with him, but... yeah. And really, thank you. Thank you for coming in and speaking with us.
Thank you all for the time.
Stefan, I guess we're letting you stay in the room. Sorry? I said, I guess we're letting you stay in the room. I see Kurt in the room already, and I think he's up next, so I don't know if he's ready to go now or if he wants to take his 5 minutes. We're 5 minutes early now. No slides. He can have the outer atmosphere behind him if he'd like. That's kind of cool.
So actually, my schedule showed we were going to start at 11. I don't know if we should wait for Akram to show up if the real schedule is 11:15. Let me see if I just saw him in the hallway.
Yeah, we can. We can pause a couple minutes.
Well, I'd rather.
We're going to check on the Akram situation here.
Okay.
Do you have Wendy? Do you have Cassie online? Could you see if Akram's in the that room? Get some juice while I'm here. How's this going?
Pretty well. I actually had a schedule, so it must be.
I thought we'd be on that schedule.
What happened?
Okay, great. Akram is on his way. And so, yeah, as Kurt just kind of said to me, this is always kind of an informal Q&A. We've got some topics, obviously, the RIA, things like that. So I will actually start to take a cue if folks have specific things or questions or topics or things that they want to have addressed by either Kurt or Akram. Will start a cue as we wait for Akram to join us. Okay, no cue. You guys are. Michaeli's going to start off in the queue. He always gets us going.
Okay, so you can take me out of the queue.
No.
Morning, Kurt.
Morning, Michaeli.
How are you?
Good.
Good. One of the questions that we didn't get a chance to address yesterday during the RAA update session was one with respect to process and procedure. The question that a couple of people were asking was the current rather broken backwards process with respect to the who is opt-out thing for registrars. How is that, if to change that or to create a new one with respect to the new RAA, where would that come from? Is that something that's simply negotiated? Is that a PDP? Where does it come from?
So I think it, to answer a different question, I think it has to be fixed in two ways. One is expanded from who is to data, and the other is to make the conditions upon which a registrar can be exempted from the contract requirements more clear. So now it requires an actual controversy, which means you kind of have to be in the pokey year. You know, where we've invoked that twice in the past, it's been that there's been some clear indications from law enforcement, like in the case of Dattel, that the rules they had were contrary to the law. And so we have to have some mechanism in advance of, you know, an actual police action being taken. So I think that's the content that has to be derived. And then we have to talk about whether we could decide to. So I think if we wrote that and then the agreement is posted for public comment, you know, that gives the this is Kurt Pritz speaking on behalf of himself. That would give the imprimatur of a cross constituency endorsement of that. In other words, we're gonna post this agreement when we have it for public comment, right? And people are gonna comment, and then, you know, realistically speaking, we're gonna argue about whether the GNSO actually has to vote or not, or if they do vote, what the effect of that is. But that discussion is going to also involve what we draft as this new procedure for exemption from data retention requirements. And so that discussion, I think, would then allow the board to say this process can be approved as is. Otherwise, you're right. You know, the exemption from due to conflicts with laws, you know, came from a policy development. It was a full-blown PDP.
So basically what you're looking at maybe is making it a contract appendix or something along those lines.
So that's what I think we should try for, because then we'd have clarity over what the content is and agree to it. And then, you know, we'll let others debate whether, you know, what can be included as a contract term.
Okay, I've got James in the queue. James?
Hi, Kurt. So just some more thinking about this opt-out mechanism and how that would have to be constructed. I know a lot of folks probably think of us as a U.S. registrar, but I think our lawyers would tell you we're a multinational registrar now. So, no. I'm in Iowa, but... I know, yeah, and I got this. But no, in particular, we subscribe to the so-called, and McKelly and Volker are experts on this, and I'm going to stumble around a little bit, but we subscribe to the safe harbor provisions of the EU data privacy regulations so that we can compete on an equal playing field for European customers in Europe, where some of our entities and some of our systems, data processing systems, exist. So I guess my question is, we would consider ourselves eligible for an opt-out if we were given any indication that we would lose that safe harbor provision that we've worked so hard to attain and that competitive playing field that we're looking to establish. So, I want to just ask, is this the course that ICANN wants to be on with this particular issue? Is this what... Because I'm concerned that we may be solving one problem and creating three.
That's right. So it's not an opt-out, right? Yeah, there are certain requirements that have to be met before there can be an exemption. And, you know, your second question is beyond the scope of my paltry education. I don't know how safe harbors work. I don't.
And I don't either necessarily. I know that we worked very hard to get it, and we certainly wouldn't want to lose it. And that's about the extent of my knowledge as well. So my question, I think, is this where we're going with this particular? Is this the course that we're on? Because I think we need to prepare for that.
Yeah. So I don't know. I know that registrars have been, keeping WHOIS data and other kinds of data for years and years and years, and nobody's been. Barred from that yet or had serious action taken from them. So I think we need to have a procedure in place so when that a registrar or registry faces the likelihood of some action being taken by police or government that they can, work with them to ensure that they comply with the local laws. You know, I don't know how that hooks into safe harbors or other rules.
Action to look into it and get our legal department to come back with some advice on that.
Sure, absolutely, and I would make all of our folks available to you to help if you have any questions.
Yeah, I would say that this whole notion of, you know, the opt-out process and what that does to the registrar market is absolutely one of the sort of front-of-mind topics for this group, clearly. I've got Jeff and Michaeli in the queue for now. Jeff.
And so I would change our lexicon from opt-out, which will fire people up, to something else.
Okay, thanks. So one of the issues, I'm going to sort of bring this back to everyone's favorite topic, Kurt, is the REA. And one of the issues that we have put forward, and for those who didn't attend the sessions on the REA, is a sort of streamlined accreditation for new TLDs, because I'm sure, as most of the registrars are aware, it's a somewhat painful process to get your sort of accreditation for each TLD once you want to start selling that TLD. So I think what I'm asking is not, you know, as a negotiated point of back and forth, but what sort of, you know, ICANN, your guys' point of view on this about streamlining it, and is this something that you see? I think we see it as a positive. It's something that you see as well, something that, you know, that you would like to move forward on. And, you know, we can negotiate the details in the negotiation sessions, but I'm sort of looking as, like, your, you know, back up your 50,000, you know, feet point of view on this topic and the importance of it. And, you know, is ICANN, you know, planning on, you know, I guess operational readiness for this? Because if we get the agreement in place by December or around that time, which is, you know, sort of the mandate that we've had, that, or will you be ready for it? Is it something that you're planning on, or are you waiting to see if it's in the agreement?
So we are looking at every way possible to streamline our processes. So we're not interested in making anything more difficult than it has to be. So that's for sure. And if things can be simplified, we will look at that. But definitely, it's going to be whatever the agreement specifies. We're going to implement. So that's the vehicle to understand what we need to do is through the RAA. Then we're looking at actually facilitating a tool on the web that also gets everybody to kind of not having to do things unnecessarily multiple times, so that you can actually somehow do exchange some documents, have a common application, whatever we can agree on. And we need to do specify some requirements, you know, so that we can implement it. But before we do that, we need to know what's in the RAA, so to know what we're going to implement. But it is a project on the list of projects for IT to do before we get into all of the, or right after we get into all of the delegations. So.
And thanks, because I think that's something that has been, I won't say lost, because in the process, because there's so many things going on with new TLDs, but I think one of the things people, I won't say neglect to remember, but registrars are required to sell the TLDs, and if it's difficult for us to become accredited, then that becomes a gating item, and it slows down the whole process, and it's something that needs to be thought of, because we wouldn't want, you know, registry sign, you know, they click off the agreement, they sign it, they're delegated, and then suddenly, like, okay, now nobody can sell it. So that's something I think needs to be thought of, and should be something, I guess, something immediate. And I think, I know myself and other registrars here would be happy to consult with you if you need on working on streamlining that process. And some of the items, you know, I could say, I won't say the problems we've had in the past, because they're not problems in getting accredited, but how, what information we could provide to you to help streamline this process and make it faster.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. So I do just want to make the point that there has been a sort of informal group that's been working on streamlining the onboarding process, and I think Rob Golding's been involved in it. I know Michaeli has previously. Tim, I don't know if you have some. Yeah, if you want to, that'd be great.
We do actually have a team developing a tool, and right now it's anticipated that it will sit. It'll be accessed through Radar, but we envision something along the lines of, well, be accessed through your login in some form, but it will provide for, you know, multiple TLDs, and you know, we're looking at how we can support that and support the communication with the registries, but it's definitely not something that's just being ignored.
Great, thanks, Tim. So I've got Michele and James, and I've got Tom Barrett. Good. I was just about to make the point that we're... Oh, yeah, go ahead, Agro.
So today the market is different. Today the registrar applies or tries to get an agreement with the registry to sell their ware. I think that we need to be careful, because as the market changes and there are so many registries, we need to be able to also think of the other way around, which means now the registry could be going to the registrars and saying, could you sell my wares? So the initiation of the process could come from the opposite direction. So we need to be very open-minded as we design this, so to make sure that it covers all the different new cases that might be at play also.
Right, yeah. So I've got Tom in the queue, and also I do want to make the point that, you know, I would encourage members that are not just at the head of the table to raise their hands, and this is a good opportunity. We have both Kurt and Akram here. So, sorry, Tom, I've got Michele, James, and then Tom, you're... Okay, I've got... Michele, James. Tom, go ahead.
Hi, Tom Barrett from Zirka. I asked a question yesterday regarding patents that apply to who is verification. And actually did not get an answer back from anyone from ICANN. But the question is, if it's found that the who is verification that we're contracted to do does violate some of these patents, or at least is challenged by the patent holders, what help could we expect from ICANN to either negotiate a license for those patents or to indemnify us from any potential infringement?
So let me be a little bit more pragmatic on this issue. I understand that we need to get involved in these details and understand how the what patents are out there and be able to put these in our agreements. But it's also important to understand that these are not fundamental technologies that we're talking about. There are always ways. These are all implementation patents, if there are any, and there's always better ways to, you know, not better ways, but maybe other ways to implement these kind of functions. So I don't see that as big of a risk as maybe you're worried about, but we will look into it and see what we can do to contractually protect everybody.
Yoav, hold on. I'll get you in the queue. Tom, is that... You're good? Your mic's still on. Sorry, that's why I'm... I've got James, Michele, and Yoav.
I think Jeff wanted a quick follow-up on that as well. So.
Just a quick follow-up is that I completely agree that, yeah, there are different processes and different methods, and, you know, as registrars, we're pretty innovative and can think of different ways to do it. What I think we're worried about is sort of being teed up for lawsuits, that somebody might say, hey, here's the process, and then, yeah, we say, hey, ours is different, but that sets us up to having to go through the analysis, through the lawsuits, and what we're saying is we don't want to be put in that position where we have to fight those lawsuits, we might have our own methods, but we don't want to be put into that position, and I think that's the issue that most of us have.
Yoav, go ahead.
Yeah, just also a follow-up on this. I don't know if you've considered this, but maybe to run some kind of your own review of the patents just with your law firm to actually understand how relevant they are, and that we'll all know about it before we have with verification signed by, I think, the RIA.
Yeah, we're going to do that. We're going to do an analysis.
Great. I've got James and Michele so far. James, go ahead.
Actually, the other guys, I think, kind of took that thread, the direction that I was going to take it, and probably said it a little bit better than me, is we get into more and more of these prescriptive, technical, procedural, or operational requirements. We're going to run into this issue of intellectual property, and I think that it's just part and parcel of, this industry going in that direction. The other thing, when I thought I was at the end of the queue, was to put out to the rest of the folks is that we've been negotiating this RAA now for a year, and I think mostly in accordance with the wishes and the sentiments of what we're hearing from registrars and what we're seeing, the discussions on the group and the mailing list. I know we've had some lively interactions. I guess my only request is now is a really great opportunity with Kurt here if you want to take some shots at the negotiating team where we dropped the ball, where we misrepresented, or where you feel like we went astray from what you were looking for, and now's your opportunity to do that. Or if you want to, you know, pat us on the back, I guess we'll take that as well, but that never happens. So you know, I'm surprised it's so quiet because we've had such lively and animated discussions about these things on the mailing list. Thanks.
Yeah, hold on, Stefan. Sorry, I got Michele and then you're up.
I normally go beforehand.
I'm sorry.
I normally go beforehand.
Michele.
Stefan, I would love to say we'll miss you, but I'm not sure if that would be true. I'm going back again to the Article 29 Working Party letter. It's just from the updates and the interactions, I have a very strong suspicion that a lot of ICANN staff, and please don't take this in badly, as you're Americans and you're not Europeans, you don't really understand the difference between what the Article 29 Working Party is, what it represents, and that it is not the GAC. There are 27 member states within the European Union. The Article 29 Working Party represents the 27 privacy, data privacy commissioners, or whatever the local term is for them, for each member state, including my state, which is Ireland, which does not have a GAC member. So if I hear ICANN saying that they're going to go back to the GAC, I will probably explode or implode or something, because I do not have a representative. There are other member states within the European Union that don't, and there is the dynamics within the GAC are such that the European states, while they have a voice, it may not be the strongest. And from the perspective of a registrar based within the European Union, there is no way on this earth that I will sign a new RAA with obligations that put me in breach of Irish law unless you provide a clear and simple method for me to protect myself under European law. And I don't know about the other European registrars here, whether they share this sentiment, but I'd be surprised if they didn't. Thanks.
Thank you. Let's remember, we're not trying to get an RAA that nobody wants to sign. So let's just agree on that. We're cooperating into getting an RAA that works for everybody. At the same time, we have we're trying to make sure that we get the industry to the reputation that it deserves. I mean, you guys do a lot of good work out there. You do everything that's possible, yet we have a bad rap. So, you know, there are certain things that we can do to improve the reputation as well as continue doing business and without, you know, burdening the restaurants, if you want, with a lot more costs. So I think that's our goal, is to achieve the best of everything. And as Fadi keeps saying, it's an equal multi-stakeholder model where we want to get everybody as fair of a share as possible in moving forward constructively. So.
Thanks, Akram. I've got Stefan and Yoav in the queue. Anyone else? Okay, Stefan.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. Just taking a cue on what James said earlier on, I'd like to congratulate the registrar negotiating team. I think they've done an excellent job, so just perhaps a round of applause for them, because they've really been working very hard to defend our interests. And also just wanted to say that I think Akram and Kurt, the community's been giving strong signals. You heard from the GNSO on Saturday. I don't know if you're in the room, but members of your team certainly did. This has been a topic of discussion yesterday in the RAA session as well. It's a topic here. I don't want to add to what's been said, but I really do think that things are being said very clearly, including, you know, let's stop the negotiations here. We've gone a long way. We've got very far. Other solutions are open to us. I think it really does require some listening on both sides so that we can get to closure on this.
Yoav.
Yeah. Excuse me for continuing to talk on the Article 29. I've raised this issue twice during our GNSO council discussions, but both of you, Akram and Kurt, you were not there, so I kind of want to echo what Michele said. The way I see it, and this is personally, the WHO's verification, the WHO's problem is something that is important for many stakeholder groups, and believe what, even for many of us here in the registrar constituency. Personally, from our company being brand protection, so registrar, so yeah, we're interested that this issue will be resolved. Saying that, the letter from the EU just shows you that this is a very, very complicated issue. It seems to me that law enforcement, the GAC, and ICANN got at a certain level most of what they were initially asking when we started the negotiations. We came to an agreement on most issues. I think our group in general was very cooperative. We had, I don't know if you understood that, James said that we had very, very serious discussions on this internally, and I think we were able to come up with some type of consensus. So this seems as an issue that is not resolved and may put many of the registrars in a really problematic position. By the way, I didn't get a review on that. It seems to me that, for example, also in Israel, it's kind of same status as in the EU. So we might be also in a similar problem. I think that the solution that was that ICANN kind of proposed in the letter, the reply to the Article 29, just creates a set of new problems, which is initially the fact that if you actually do that and you allow an opt-out for European registrars, then practically you don't get what you wanted in WHO's verification, because bottom line, this whole thing is intended to, try and stop cybercrime. So what will the cyber criminals do? Just move to European registrars. On the other hand, you will also provide, a lot of people are not saying that, but this whole thing has a cost. If it will have a patent thing, it will also have a cost. So this will provide an advantage and a competitive advantage to European registrars. So I'm sure this is not what ICANN intends to do. Saying all this, it's clear that if there is an issue on the table that needs to go to a PDP, this is the one. Being on the GNSO, we deal with a lot of processes, a lot of different things. There are, from time to time, we deal with real matter. This is one of them. This is something, you hear the NCUC, you hear other groups in the stakeholder model saying, we have different issues with this. So I know, I understand where, you as ICANN staff are coming from and want to see the results. But let's make sure that this thing doesn't blow up in our face. And it's better to be careful here. And I assure you, I being on the GNSO, I will be the first one to push that this would be the fastest PDP that we can have. But we'll have input from everyone. And just recently, I don't know if you're aware, we had James and Michele were leading a group that had a very fast PDP. It was on fake. What was it? Not fake. The RTP. Sorry, the RTP. So it was done relatively quick to other PDPs. So I would seriously ask you, and of course we ask the board also, to consider this as an option. Thank you.
Thanks, Yoav. Kurt Akram, did you want to respond or?
Uh, I, I understand what's being said, and we'll, you know, we do want to get the RAA done as soon as possible. We will we're always willing to talk and listen, and so if we come to that crossroad of where we have to send things to get them done, then we will make that decision then. Again, I think that we're too close right now to actually start backtracking. So that's where I think I am right now, and we need to kind of get together and discuss how to move forward. So,
yeah, go ahead, James. I agree with you. I mean, we're so close to the end, I agree with you. But I want to be careful. The difference between adding new things at the 11th hour versus taking things out, I think you can always take things out. You know, it's sunk work, but I agree. But I see your point about changing course dramatically. But I think that things can be omitted or moved to a different venue, like a PDP, without really affecting the overall progress that you've made to date. I think it's when we want to like add new things that we run into the problem you described.
Yeah, and I think you just see, you know, just amongst this group, the different opinions and the complex challenges that, you know, issues like who is validation and data retention, like we've been saying, are absolutely complex. So I've got Ben and I've got Volker in the queue. Go ahead, Ben.
Cheers, Matt. I think, I mean, we've spoken about this a great deal, and of course many people in this room are working to get the contract negotiations done, and I don't think it's without doubt that most registrars in this room will move to the new agreement and will comply and will try and strive to make this a better place. But the question remains that there's a subset of registrars at the bottom where we're actually increasing the gap between how we verify registrants and how they operate, and having a new contract in place is all well and good, but you need to be able to enforce those registrars that continuously break the rules. And we all know who they are. And I don't understand why we have to continuously push to achieve greater standards, yet you allow those at the bottom to continuously slip. So it's a matter of better compliance. And we heard Maggie earlier, but that didn't really talk too much about the people that continuously break the rules and continuously profit from this. So it's all well and good all of us sitting in here saying once we get the contract done, that's great, but it needs a firm commitment from you to handle those registrars in the bottom tier that continuously make all of us look bad.
So I'm new to this contractual relationship, and you know, just a point of clarification, are we talking about all of the prior, all the registrars that are staying on the older contracts?
Not all of them.
Okay.
Yeah, you want me to?
Contrary to popular belief. No, I'm not talking about. Thank Dad. I'm not talking about all of them on the 2006. Is it 2006? 2001, but quite a few of them on there are the one, and we all know who they are. Everyone in this room knows who they are. So, I mean, something should be done about it.
Yeah, so those expire after 5 years, but, you know, your point's well taken. So I think there's, you know, 50 to 70 registrars still under the old agreement, but there's they represent very few registrants. You know, just a very small number. So what are the... But I understand abuses can take place without registrants.
This is one of the issues that we have, is that we need some better tools to, you know, escalate issues like that and be able to put remediation as well as termination in the contracts to be able to close it in case something like this happens. So... We understand the challenge, and we, you know, we're not happy that we have to live with certain things. So.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in the negotiations, you know, the registrar team is been willing and we've put in, you know, in enhanced enforcement capabilities into the contract. So to Ben's point, we're able to, you know, weed out those registrars that simply aren't living up to their obligations. I've got Volker and McKaylee and Tom in the queue. Volker.
Volker speaking. I have 3 points to make. One of these is the issue that we just discussed, that we have recognized, ICANN has recognized, and the negotiation team has also recognized the problem that there are registrars under different RAAs at the moment, and we are looking to fix that with the proposed RAA, which includes, from our side, a suggestion to have continuous renewal and update functions, that once all registrars are under this new agreement, new terms, new obligations can be entered into that agreement without having everybody to sign a new agreement when once their old agreement runs out, so everybody's at the same level. And we're also looking at a way to make this agreement effective on all registrars once this becomes the final version. We're still not sure how to do that, but we're working on that. That's one of the final open topics on that. Regarding your comments for the so-called opt-out, I wouldn't call it that, because it's not a full opt-out, or it's just a way to be able to comply with local laws. So we would still be forced to implement data retention as far as the local law allows. So the costs will probably be close to the same for this implementation for European registrar. And I do not think that the increased volume of revenue from added registrations that come to us from people that flee the other registrars that have stricter regulations will make up for the increase in abuse complaints we have to treat.
Thanks, Volker. I've got McKaylee and Tom. McKaylee.
Thanks. Just going back again to the compliance enforcement, I mean, basically the enforcement of the contract, one of the issues we're very, very conscious of is that if ICANN wants to track down Name.com, GoDaddy, Black Knight, Key Systems, and a bunch of us, it's pretty easy. We're easy targets. We're there. We're easy to find. I know some of us more than others. One of the things that shocks me and disturbs me is when ICANN compliance tells us that you still have registrars who aren't paying their fees. This is negligence. If we provide services to customers, if they do not pay their bills, they get cut off. This is a binary decision. It's very, very simple. If you don't pay, you don't get the service. How is it possible that ICANN executives can tell us with a straight face that you still have registrars who do not pay their fees? That you want to impose a new contract with new, more stringent obligations, yet you are incapable of actually collecting the fees from all the registrars. I would love to know how that is possible.
Right. So we went. I can tell you about the past. About 2 years ago, we went through an operation where we had a list of registrars who weren't paying their fees, and we ticked each one off the list, and they all got de-accredited, and or we collected on every single one of them. So I'm surprised that that's going on.
Well, I mean, in the case of the ones that were kicked off, as it were, I mean, in many respects, it was a kind of a Capone tactic, as in you go after the money to remove registrars that you had other issues with. But I mean, in one case, for example, looking at the ones from 2 or 3 years back, one registrar in question that I'm aware of got accredited and then never paid a single dime. So I mean, it wasn't a case of them missing one or two quarters or one bill. It was literally, I got a stack of invoices from ICANN for that registrar because the debt collection agency got confused and thought we were that registrar. And, I mean, it was literally a stack of invoices this thick. But, I mean, Maggie Surratt, in her update this morning, said, again, that there was a registrar being removed for non-payment. And based on the kind of thing that we'd seen in the past, then I would assume, I mean, of course you can correct me, that it wasn't a case of them missing one or two invoices, that it was a larger number. Which is why I have deep concerns with this new RAA that you would expect me to sign, when you're not going to actually impose the obligations on all registrars equally, but you will quite happily impose it on those of us you can find easily. So you'll be able to score little brownie points going, hey, we've got a compliance action against these registrars, but then you've got much more serious issues aren't being dealt with. In Prague, for example, we saw statistics from compliance where a certain group of registrars in a certain geographic region were because of the largest number of complaints. Yet ICANN has never sent compliance staff physically to visit those registrars, which makes absolutely no sense to me. I know for a fact that if there was an issue with ourselves, somebody from ICANN's Brussels office would probably turn up at my door if they weren't getting answers. Yet, I mean, come on, we know that. I mean, that's fine by me, but, you know, if you're going to impose a stronger contract, you need to be able to enforce it equally across the board, not just picking on easy targets.
So our intention is not to pick on the goodwill of the good registrars. That doesn't make sense for us. Actually, we want to do the right thing for the industry, and that's what we want to do, and there is no ifs or buts about it. So I'm surprised to hear that. My understanding is that is not the case, that there isn't that gap that, you know, you're highlighting. If there is a case that's happened, we will look into it. And we will make sure, I'll work with Tim on this, make sure that we get a regular report, maybe, and we need to figure out how to make the report public on maybe not the names, but maybe the numbers of, you know, who's paying, who's not paying, or number of registrars that are paying and that are not paying, so that it's actually a transparent issue and not a in some back room. One of the concerns I have is, and I'm not sure that's the case, but I remember hearing that somebody that doesn't pay, you go to do a breach with them, and then they pay. And so now you have to start all over again. There is no way to say, well, you're not paying on a regular basis, therefore, you know, there is a breach, and therefore we can terminate. I don't know if that's exactly how it works, then, but these are the kind of things that we look for to be able to improve so that we can help you clean up this mess. So, but I'll let them do the details.
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, first of all, we do have a beta tool that we were using with the old finance system that tracked, you know, past due and the steady decline in, you know, how many were 90 days past due or more. And, you know, as Kurt mentioned earlier, you know, we've already gone through a significant process of cleaning out the longstanding past due registrars, and up to a point where everybody was saying, oh, all compliance does is collect money. You know, so we're damned if we do and we're damned if we don't. You know, you're saying we got to get everybody kicked off who doesn't pay, and other people say that's just, you know, see what compliance, what ICANN's all about is the money. But I don't think what you heard this morning was that this registrar was terminated for non-payment. It was terminated or was breached because of a failure to invoke or to comply with the UDRP. And in the process, they had some past due money, and so that was included. But that's, you know, as Akram says, there's still this 1-2-3 process. You know, you get 30 days past due, you know, 60 days past due. Each step is an escalation in the compliance efforts. You know, the case you're talking about is history. That's yeah, you saw that, and that's been fixed. That's been addressed. So, you know, if Michaela, if you keep bringing that same example up, you know, it doesn't. Well, you've raised it before with me.
I have raised it before, but I haven't said a word about it in a long time. It was only morning when she said that somebody has been suspended for non-payment. That just triggered the thing.
Yeah, but I guess I'm just saying there's always going to be someone triggered for non-payment because they're always constantly aging, you know, payments. You know, you can't kick a registrar out because they're 30 days past due, or you wouldn't have any registrars.
Yeah, no, it's a fair point. I think, and I'll not that I'm speaking for Michele, but I think part of the frustration is when we see that, that an action has been taken against a registrar for other things, and we see, oh, by the way, they were also delinquent on their payments to us sitting in this room. And, of course, I don't know everyone's payment history, but, you know, I have to assume that, you know, we are all paying our bills appropriately on time and things like that. It just, you know, just shows that it's troubling for us.
I agree with you 100%. I think that the the issue here is not lowering the bar to the least common denominator. It's raising the bar to the highest common denominator, and that's what we're aiming to do. Everybody knows that compliance has been improving its methods and its processes, and things are going to get better. We are working on automating a lot of the things that take a lot of the bandwidth of the team instead of starting to look at proactive measures to improve the way we perform and we work together. They're still chasing issues, and we want to get beyond that so that we can put proactive measures instead of reactive measures. So we're improving things. I think the Maggie and her team are doing a great job now catching up on things. We're setting up some systems that will help them gain bandwidth, and I think that we're moving in the right direction. So.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Tim, go ahead.
I just wanted to follow up on that. In addition, our finance team is in the process of developing, you know, much more customer-friendly, you know, electronic billing and credit card acceptance and online, you know. So, you know, that alone, I think, will help also with this process, because one of the problems we have is that our old system, we had to mail or we had to, you know, send physical copies of the bills out, and in some parts of the world, they never get there, you know. And so then we would have to make manual exceptions to take their invoices, scan them, and send them to them by email. Now we're going to automate that, and so we have installed a much more robust finance system, and that's one of the things it's going to permit us to do. So I think in not just looking at the compliance end, but at the front end, if we make it easier for people to get their bills and to pay them, we're going to have much better compliance with it.
Yep. Okay. We're going to wrap things up with Mr. Barrett, and Tom will have our last question for this session. Tom.
All right. Well, I'm going to come back to the RAA negotiations. You made the comment, we're so close. So let's keep going down this path. And we are close when you consider there are 14 issues, and we apparently have reached agreement on 12 of them, or at least the negotiating team has reached agreement on 12 of them. But the one that's left, especially who is verification, the open issues are not details. They're pretty macro, at a macro level. Whether or not we do verification post or pre-resolution, whether or not we do email and phone or one or the other. And it seems to me that even if we can reach agreement on those, there are a lot more details that need to be worked out, and we're not close on those details at all. And so I would echo James' comment that 12 out of 14 is close, and we should do some triage and decide if those last two should be PDP or if we can work them out at a later time. But if we want to put this to bed because we are so close, we should go where we have agreement.
Yep, thanks, Tom. So I think with that, let's go ahead and thank Kurt and Akram for making time today. I know you guys have all sorts of time constraints and pulls during the day, so appreciate you coming in always and having this interaction. So a round of applause for them.
Thank you for having us, and hopefully we will be talking about future things and more better ways to do business together instead of looking at the past moving forward. Thanks.
Yep, thanks, Akram. And now it's time to break for lunch. And for those of you that aren't in the room, I'm sorry to tell you that lunch was actually brought in today. We have box lunches in the back of the room presented by .pw, the professional web. So for those of you that want to stay in the room and have lunch, there is lunch in the back of the room. We don't have any agenda session items, so we'll take a break for an hour and reconvene back here in this room at 1 o'clock. Thank you all.
Operator, you